You know, Jeff asked me to preach in this sermon series, and I started thinking, I'm like, okay, so it's weird, because normal isn't working. So I started thinking about some weird things. I'm not sure if you guys have ever thought about it or not, but elevators are pretty unusual places. They are. You're packed in like sardines. Nobody wants to touch someone, so you're standing there with your arms against your sides. No one talks. You can't look at anybody. In fact, the only thing you look at are the numbers up at the top that are lighting up for each floor you go past. Have you ever noticed how two people, they are having a conversation, but when they walk into an elevator, they just stop talking? I'm telling you, there's some weird things that go on in elevators. In many respects, though, that elevator is a microcosm of our society today. A large, impersonal institution where secrecy, isolation, and independence are the norm. It shows us that people can be surrounded by other people in a crowded setting and yet not experience community. We can be a part of a company or a club or a church and not feel as though we belong or that we're accepted. We can share a carpool, an office, or even a home and not have significant relationships. So we're going to go over here. So this vase right here, this is going to represent us, our life, all right? So we're going to use this rice to represent the small relationships in our life. Maybe our coworkers, sports teammates, I mean, you name it, any small relationship. Then we're going to use these balls right here to represent the bigger relationships in our life. Maybe our parents, our kids, our grandparents, maybe even your small group members. And then this right here, this biggest ball, is going to be God, okay? God should be first in all of our relationships. But the problem is that a lot of times we start filling our life with these small relationships first. And when we put these small relationships in, it fills up a lot of our life. And then we move on to the bigger relationships. So the mom, the dad, the sister, the brother, the grandparents. And the problem is that when we do it in this order, we tend to run out of room and things get left out. Maybe dad gets left out. We don't have time for dad or mom or grandparents. And things just don't work out well, let alone having enough room for the most important relationship in our life. God doesn't even begin to fit. So we need to look at how we can be weird in our relationships and how we can fit them in the right order. So you see, we can learn a lot from, or we yearn for relationships that are to be completely honest, open, and vulnerable. Where we can share failures as well as successes, shortcomings as well as strengths, where we can find intimacy as well as confidentiality. See, close relationships are exactly what God had in mind for us. He created us for relationships, and he wants us to experience them at their best. One of the purposes why he created the body of Christ, the church. You see, life is built on relationships, and it's long been said, it's not what you know, it's who you know. See, the part of this equation that we often miss is that our relationships have a huge impact on the person we are and the person that we will become. In fact, all of life is about relationships. Every one of us is involved in multiple relationships. God, family, friends, associates in business, classmates. And some of those relationships are really good, and they bring us a lot of joy in our life. While some of those relationships are unhealthy, and they are creating problems that we just simply don't need in our life. So today we're going to discover some weird truths about relationships. Romans 12:12 says, "Do not be conformed any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will." You see, we must build relationships like Jesus teaches us to do and not like the world tells us to do. While society will see this as weird, we need to listen to what he has to tell us. See, Jesus indicated that our first priority is to have a vertical relationship between us and God, and then a secondary relationship between, or a horizontal relationship between ourselves and fellow man. So you can't have the second relationship without the first. Having a loving and faithful relationship with God and His Son, Jesus Christ, must be our greatest priority. For all other relationships stand in the shadow of this very most important relationship. See, how we view ourselves and others, how we relate to them and treat them, they all stem from this single greatest relationship. So today, we're going to be discussing three areas of human relationships that are to be greatly influenced by our relationship with God. So the first one we're going to talk about is the husband and wife or the marriage relationship. And I'm only going to briefly touch on this because Jeff's going to go into a lot more detail on it next week. But let me say a few things about this very important relationship. You see, to be really fulfilled in your marriage, you must put God first and your spouse second. Mark 12, 30 through 31 says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength." The second is this, "Love your neighbor as yourself." There is no greater commandment greater than these. So putting God first doesn't make your marriage easy. It is just the key to a weird and yet wonderful marriage. See, expecting your spouse to meet all your needs and eliminate all of your struggles will set you both up for three significant challenges: compromise, entitlement, and bitterness. And these ultimately lead to a poor relationship. I'm going to tell you right now, if the grass looks greener somewhere else, then it's time to water your own lawn. See, marriage shouldn't be a joint, should be a joint relationship that is built on God. And when you fill it with too many expectations, you are destined for a letdown in your marriage. If we focus on God to meet our needs and view our spouse as a gift to us, we stop expecting another person to do what only God can do. And we strengthen our two biggest relationships between God and our spouse. You see, normal people neglect their marriage and they expect it to thrive. But your marriage is like a garden. If you don't water it and you don't weed it, it's going to be far from thriving. So what we need to do is we need to concentrate on, collaborate with, and communicate with our spouse so that we build a strong relationship that's not so commonly seen in our world today. And because we are intentionally weird with our spouse. The second relationship we're going to talk about is the parent and child relationship. The relationship between parents and kids in today's world is so split. Even though there might be two or more sides to something, most people are so set in their one way being the one and only right way. For example, sheltering kids versus giving them too much freedom, making kids work versus giving them everything. And now, while I'm sure you can think of many, many more differences, because there's a lot out there, we're going to focus on these two today. And we're going to see how society is splitting the family over somewhat silly reasons. See, parents who feel it necessary to shelter their kids do it with the mindset that there's just too much bad in the world, and that their kids simply just don't need to see it. The flip side of this is that these kids often don't get immersed in society, and they become socially backwards and can't function in society. The flip side of that is that giving kids too much freedom, and the parents believe that this will make their kids like them more, and they'll have a better relationship with them. But the flip side of that is that too much freedom causes these kids to have no boundaries or rules, and they never learn to follow or respect authority figures. See, there's a lot of extremes out there. So what about that second example? Parents who feel it necessary to make kids work, maybe chores, farm work, a part-time job as young adults. See, parents do this with the mindset that it prepares their kids for life. But the opposite parents feel that it's robbing the kids of their childhood, and it tortures them even. The flip side of this is to give your child everything. The parents don't want their kids to lift a finger because they're just kids. But the opposite of that is that the kids get spoiled and made into lazy kids who don't really want to help themselves or society. One summer when I was in junior high, I spent the summer working on a farm. I'm going to tell you, that summer changed me. That summer out in the heat, working and putting up, we built wood fence, we put up hay, it was tough. But it taught me a strong work ethic. Now, did my parents make me do that? Absolutely not. In fact, my draw was probably their three daughters who were right around my age, one of which I ended up marrying. So it worked out well for me. But ever since that summer, my work ethic changed, all because I wasn't taught that simply because I was a kid, I didn't need to do anything. See, there's two pretty good examples of how parenting differs. However, as Christians, we need to be the weird parents and not drift one way or the other in these spectrums that are put on us. We need to step away from the extremes of society of one versus the other being absolutely right or wrong. Luke 9:25 says, "What good is it for a man to gain the whole world and yet lose or forfeit his very self?" You see, if we raise children to be well-adjusted, materially comfortable adults, but they don't respect us as parents, or even worse, they don't know the one who created them or live for him, then all the success in the world is for nothing. See, instead of raising our kids to be like those around them, we need to raise our kids to be like Christ. The Weir Book quotes the Message version of the Bible in Romans 12:2 when it says, "Don't become so well-adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You will be changed from the inside out. Recognize what God wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings about the best out of you." See, our greatest priority as Christian parents is to gradually transfer our children's dependence away from us until it rests fully on God. To do this, I'm going to give you guys six ways that we need to teach our children. The first way is we got to teach them to manage God's money. The next generation is probably the most entitled generation in our country's history, probably because they've seen our generation borrow to buy what we want right now. However, financial responsibility is what we need to teach them. Proverbs 3:9-10 says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of your crop. Then your barns will be filled to overflowing, and your vats will brim over with new wine." See, if you aren't practicing financial responsibility yourself, you need to start right now. That way your kids can see what you are doing, and that way they learn from you. When I was in high school, I was able to witness a family in our church. They were going through a really tough time. The dad had been diagnosed with a disease that left him almost unable to walk. He couldn't work. The family had endured lots of medical bills, and they were really struggling. But I was able to witness a family in our church, another family, step up and help this family out. They bought Christmas presents for the kids, and they gave them food and fresh fruit for a nice Christmas meal. And that family was so appreciative. Now, did that other family in the church have to step up and help out? Absolutely not. But I can guarantee you that their kids will never forget their parents making it a priority to help others out in need. So remember, when you're in a position to help someone, be glad and do it with a grateful heart, because it's very possible that God is using you to answer someone else's prayer. The second thing we need to teach them is that they need to carefully select their friends. The right friends will make or break your child. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." You see, we're not going to always be able to control the peer pressure our children face. But if we influence their friends, we can help guide them in the right way. Remember what 1 Corinthians 15:33 says, "Bad company corrupts good character." And I can honestly tell you from personal experience, guys, that this does make a difference. Growing up as a part of the youth group, there were some kids in our church that were always active in church. They always came to things. But as we got into high school, they started getting involved with the wrong friends. They kept falling farther and farther away, and they got involved with drugs and alcohol. And it didn't matter what we did, no matter how hard we tried to pull them back, they fell further and further away because they made the wrong friends. Making sure your kids have the right friends is really important. And if you don't know who their friends are, I want to recommend that you find a way to get to know them and know what types of kids that they are. The third thing we need to do is we need to teach them to watch their words. Proverbs 4:24 says, "Keep your mouth free of perversity. Keep corrupt talk far from your lips." You see, if our words are not honoring to God or others, then we have a heart issue. And that's going to affect other areas of our life. Most importantly, it's going to affect our relationships. Bullying has become a huge thing in schools today. And I'm going to tell you right now, as much of it is verbal as it is physical. Studies have shown that it often comes from kids who are not taught to control their tongue or words at home. See, as parents, we have enormous power in teaching our children based on the words that we use with them. So teach them to speak positively. The fourth thing we need to teach them is to be responsible. And many parents feel like this is a tough thing to do. But Galatians 6, 3 through 6 says, "For if anyone thinks he is something when he is nothing, he deceives himself. But let each one test his own work, and then his reason to boast will be in himself alone and not in his neighbor. For each will have to bear his own load." So you might feel like you're doing your kids a favor by bearing the load for them. But that's not what the Bible teaches us to do for our kids. See, we need to teach them to be responsible. Maybe give them a couple of chores around the house. And it needs to be something that if they don't get done, that there's consequences for. And every family's different in how they choose to do this, but the important thing to remember is that you need to teach your kids responsibility. The fifth thing is they need to be generous. By nature, we are very selfish, yet we are never more like God than when we are generous. Proverbs 11:25 says, "A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed." For those of you who don't know, I have a 2-year-old daughter at home. And let me tell you guys, she is a great example of being selfish, but also giving generously. See, when someone takes a toy that she wants, she grabs it back and she says, "Mine." Because that's just how kids are. They're selfish by nature. But as parents, we need to teach our young children that this is not acceptable and that we need to share with others. My wife and I work with our daughter to do this. And I'm not going to tell you that it's not a challenge and that it's not hard and that we don't still struggle with it. But those who know my daughter also know that if you ask her for a bite of her cookie or a bite of her food, she's more than happy to give it to you. And oftentimes, she even offers it up on her own. And that's being generous for a 2-year-old. And as the children get older, the training is more about seeing what the parents are doing rather than what they say. So are you guiding your children and showing your older children to be generous in a selfish world? The sixth and last thing that we need to teach our kids is to fear and love God. It is totally normal for people living in today's society to not know or respect God. See, if we want to have a relationship with our children that God calls us to have, then we need to teach them to fear and love their Heavenly Father. And that starts when they see the relationship that we have with Him already. So the big idea for these six things is that we don't need to make our kids independent. We need to make them independent of another person, but dependent on God. And I'm going to tell you, this is a totally weird concept in today's culture. The final area of relationships that we're going to talk about is our relationships with others, maybe friends, coworkers. And the biggest thing to remember is that your relationship with God always comes first, before any of these relationships. And if these relationships negatively affect you, then you need to change them immediately. See, the biggest problem that people run into is the art of people-pleasing. Do you have relationships built on pleasing someone else? What they think about you, your clothes, your house, maybe your car? If so, it's not a healthy relationship. See, we need to be weird in our relationships with others and not care about how others see us. We need to have a relationship with God and do what God is calling us to do and not worry about what others think. We need to be more concerned with what God thinks than with what people think. And again, this is an extremely weird concept, but this is how God calls us to be in our socially mixed up society. The need to please is a disease in our society. It starts in adolescence with things like clothes that are cool or in style, and it extends to things like sex, alcohol, and drugs. And unfortunately, the need to please doesn't end when you graduate or get out of school. You see, it's human nature to want to find a group of people and fit in with them. However, the problem arises when we compromise two vital areas: our relationship with God See, God needs to be first before peers, money, or anything that pleases others. When we place the approval of other people ahead of doing what we know will please the Father, we are creating a false idol. And not only does this harm our relationship with God, but it sends us on a wild goose chase for something that doesn't even exist. If the approval of others is all you live for, then nothing will ever be enough for you. The second is our relationship with ourselves. Have you ever noticed that we tend to judge other people by their actions, but yet we judge ourselves by our intentions? If we repeatedly choose to live in a way that contradicts our belief and values, we undermine our own authenticity and integrity, and this harms our relationship with others as well as God. John 12, 42 through 43 says, "Yet at the same time, many even among the leaders believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they would not openly acknowledge their faith, for fear that it would put them out of the synagogue. For they loved human praise more than praise from God." You see, people pleasing is more of a spiritual problem than it is a relational problem. Do you find yourself doing things you shouldn't just be liked or approved of? Do you feel pressure to conform to a certain lifestyle or image around certain people? If so, then you are poisoned with pleasing others. People are too big in your life, and God is just too small. The fear of God is the only cure for the fear of man. And when you truly know God, people's opinions will no longer hold you hostage. You need to surrender your normal life of people-pleasing for the wonderful weirdness of being set apart by God. Why be normal when God created us to stand out? All right, so we're going to move over here to the second vase. So now that we've talked about our relationships and how they should go, what we need to do is we need to put our biggest relationship first. So we're going to put God in. And after you do that, then you start with your other bigger relationships. And we fill those up. And then we start, or then we finish with the small relationships, the ones that often cause us to be people pleasers. And when we do it in the right order, everything fits. You know, in fact, when you stop and, or when you think about it, this is what the world tells us is normal, okay? That's what the world is telling us. But if you listen to God and you listen to Jesus and you read the Bible, this is how our life is supposed to be, right here. So the weird way to live is right over here. So the question is, how are you going to continue to live your life? How are you going to worry about your relationships? You see, man's relationship to God and man's relationship to one another are what God calls us to do in that order. So are you being weird by having your relationships in the right place? If you want to buck the norm and have what few have, then you have to do what few do. As we enter into our time of invitation, maybe some of you are living your life like this. You've already accepted Christ, but you don't have your priorities in line. Maybe you need to come up and talk to someone or have some, our next step teams pray for you. If so, come up during this song. And maybe some of you are living your life like this and you've never accepted Christ. And if that's the case, come forward if you have a decision to make, and we'll meet with you.